Hi, guys, and welcome to the show. I don't want to scare anybody, but I believe I'm in Ultra HD now. Hey, guys, like I said, I don't want to scare anybody, but I'm in Ultra HD today. This is actually my Surface Book, my brand new Surface Book, and the camera on it apparently looks awesome because that's what everybody's telling me. So I'm excited about that, but not as excited as I am to have Jessica back. Jessica, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks, and I'm coming to you live from Ignite Australia on the Gold Coast of Queensland. So very exciting. We are actually in the expo hall, 7:30 a.m. Australian time before everybody got here. So very exciting event this week.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, so I think the last time I was in Pasadena in the dark, and now you're halfway around the world.
Yeah, it's a traveling taste of premiere because we've done one where I was in Seattle. We did one where I was actually at home. We did the one where I was in Canada, and now I'm in Australia.
Right. Yeah, you were so in Canada, and I was in Pasadena.
Yeah. So this is the traveling Microsoft lifestyle.
Yeah, so this camera's kind of freaking me out a little bit because I can see, you know, my little preview on the screen. And, yeah, I want to apologize to everybody in advance. I don't know if you've ever seen the Family Guy episode where I think it's Joyce Kenny is the local newscaster, and she's in regular, you know, she's in regular resolution, and the channel, they switch to Ultra HD, and it turns out she's like 80 years old. So, sorry, guys, in advance.
I still have a crappy camera, so we're good to go. Yeah.
No, you look awesome. But you're upside down for some reason. Oh, wait, you're in Australia. Yeah.
I've been trying to avoid making stereotypical Australian jokes, but I am going to make one about comparing incident response preparation to knowing which way to look when you cross the street in Australia, because I've almost been hit by a tram two times. They come from the opposite direction here. Yeah. Wow. So my risk.
So what I want to know is, does the water really go counterclockwise?
I wouldn't know because all of the toilets here are like that super duper water saving kind. I can't believe we're doing this on the internet. But they're like that super duper water saving kind. Yeah, so I try to not even look at what's happening.
Because you would never find anything like this on the internet. speaking of bizarre stuff, I hear we're going to talk about incident response today.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, just sort of some of the theoretical preparation work for incident response. This isn't going to necessarily be about, you know, an in-depth dive into what we do at an incident response. It's more about knowing what to do when you've been compromised. Because the time you find out you're compromised is because a government agency calls you and says, communicating with this server that's affiliated with these bad guys, and then they sort of just hang up on you and say good luck with that. So then you're stuck in a rough place. You don't have the right data, you don't know what you're looking at, and you don't know how to get help. So a couple things I want to talk about today is first and foremost how to get help, because if you're a Microsoft customer, you can get help. And then the other thing is how to be prepared, so you're going in, maybe you're detecting the compromise before the government agency calls you, and how you can make our jobs easier once we're on their network and we're helping you out.
Mm-hmm. So you're breaking up just a little bit, but I don't know if it's going to be in the podcast or not. Hopefully not. But so how do we handle those types of incidents?
Yeah, so if you do know that you've been compromised, if somebody has reached out to you and definitively told you that you are compromised, the very first thing that you should do is you should reach out to your Microsoft representative and you should open a case with us, because you are, unfortunately, it is not really possible to remediate, diagnose, and solve a determined human adversary or advanced persistence on your own. They come through, they're going to put malware implants across your network. It's going to be incredibly hard to detect them. They're going to have sleeps built into them so that a certain piece of malware will wake up 6 months from now on your network. And unless you are a professional incident responder, it's going to be really impossible off of your network. And I know that's a really crappy place to be in where you know that you've got this terrible thing happening in your life, you've been compromised, and now it seems like, you know, somebody's out there doing ambulance chasing or something like that. But the long-term strategy, if you do not engage an incident response company at that point in time, they will always be on your network and you will never know what they touched. So that is the very first thing you need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually kind of crazy, the sleep thing. I didn't think about that, but that's pretty scary.
That's actually one of my favorite parts of it. And one of the sessions I'm doing here, actually, and I'll give the link at the end so you guys can put it at the bottom of the thing, is actually on incident response and how we track them down, what the malware looks like and what it's doing. And a piece of the malware that I analyzed during that session actually has those built-in 6-month sleeps, and it changes the IP address it talks to every 18 months. So this malware had been on that network for 2 years, and it actually evaded detection of the first incident response company that came in because they were basing what they were looking on just on known IP addresses that bad guy used, looking at a proxy log, and then chasing the machines down that way. The way we do incident response is we actually go out and we scan all of your endpoints and we look for every single one of them for a piece of an anomaly. So we work from the bottom of the pyramid up versus from a single detection down. And that's how we were able to find that malware in that environment.
Wow. So we saw some TCP sessions to an address that didn't make sense.
That's actually how the other guys found it, is they saw TCP sessions to an address that didn't make sense. They saw, you know, TCP communication coming out from a domain controller, actually. So they worked backwards through the environment. The implant that I have was not on a domain controller. It was actually on an STCM server. And because it hadn't been beaconing at the time they were working backwards, they didn't find it. So when they got another call from another government agency, their TAM was engaged and they worked with us. And we did the thing that we do where we work backwards. We check every endpoint. We find every anomaly because we found there were between 5 and 10 additional implants and additional varieties of malware in that environment that hadn't been found on the first pass. So every single one of those was an automatic command prompt on the internet for a domain admin style type of thing. Because the way the malware works, and there'll be a nice little graphic for this hopefully, is they're going to come in and they're actually going to install a service on a machine. They've used something like an elevation of privilege so that they've turned into an admin. They've used that flash crash to a driver elevation of privilege, their local system on that box. So they'll install a service, and that service is a persistence mechanism. So every time you reboot that machine, their malware is still hanging out. It can do credential theft. It can do whatever it wants. But frequently it acts as what's called a remote access toolkit or a Trojan of some kind. And because it's sitting there and it can hang out on your box, it's going to send a little bit of an HTTP packet or an HTTPS packet out to an address that exists just for your organization. And it's only going to do it every so often. And the reason it does that is because it wants to take advantage of TCP communication's stateful nature. If they open up a communication channel out of your firewall, guess what? So that service is essentially acting as a system level command prompt on a server in your environment from the internet. And that's how this malware works. So if we hadn't found those additional pieces of malware, they would have had... I'm at an event and they're announcing sessions.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is real, guys. This is just like the bus in the last episode.
That's right. Keep going.
Yeah, but since system level access on a server, they would have been able to just keep running as domain admins in that environment. So these people had spent massive amounts of time, money, effort tracking down the bad guys, resetting all the passwords in their domain, buying a ton of new security stuff, and they were still completely owned. So it's really important to do the appropriate type of incident response at the beginning, because otherwise you're just maintaining a network for a bad guy.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And God only knows how many instances of that there are right now in the wild.
A lot.
Oh,
yeah. I mean,
everywhere.
It's a very sort of sad state, because the nice thing about how we engage with our customers is a lot of the other incident response companies, they get called because the person knows they have a very serious threat on their network, and they're calling and they're ready to write a check and they want to deal with a serious threat on their network. a lot of times how we get engaged is because somebody opens a ticket because their Exchange server is behaving poorly. And then we find out that they've got a keylogger or on their Exchange server type of thing. There's a filter driver capturing thing. Because you can engage us for anything. We are here to right. help you with operational type of things.
Yeah.
Customers who have had adversaries for forever, they've dealt with an incident before, they knew they were compromised, and they're still compromised. And that's another thing that really sets us apart for how we do the incident response. Knowing how the bad guys behave. We have the biggest sensor network in the world. I think we've talked about this before. Send us your telemetry data, because your telemetry data from Bing, from Emmet, from Skep, from Windows crashes, we know what the bad guys are doing within a space of an hour or two after they change behavior. So because we know what the bad guys are doing, we're not just coming in and scanning your network and telling you where the malware is. We're telling you how to be safe going forward, because we don't want you to get compromised again. So when we look at what's happened in an environment, we come in and we want to make sure that it never happens to you again. So we find all the malware, we get rid of all the implants, and then we lead you down the path to security, whether that be the credential hygiene, a SLAM, Red Forest, Emmet, whatever else it is. We're determined to make sure it doesn't happen to you again. And if it does happen, you detect it a lot faster, because we don't want incident response to be something that's a daily effort for you.
So how do we get people enabled for success?
It's an interesting place to be, because a lot of times being enabled for success, people would assume that they're going to go out there and they're going to spend multi-million dollar investments on new sensor technology, or they need to do a ton of new stuff in the environment. A lot of times all we want you to do to enable yourself for success at detection and control, protective and detective controls, is already built into the operating system. I just did a presentation here this week on Windows Event Forwarding, which is something that is built into the operating system and has been for a very long time. It's centralized logging. It's a way for you to get events from systems of high value, interesting events onto a collector and alert on them. And 70% of the people at this conference did not know that they already had that as a built-in feature of Windows.
Yeah. WinRM, right?
Yeah, it uses WinRM, absolutely. Yeah. So one of the things that we do is we actually have created a script. Russell Tompkins, an Australian PFE, has actually helped me out with it. It's a 5-minute cut and paste script for putting up a Windows Event Forwarder where you will be detecting 5 of the biggest incidents instantly in your network for free. So that's actually going to be in the links down below, and it's in the session I covered here, because we want to help you be enabled for success. And you can certainly scale upon that. Just because you have a SIM in the environment, maybe if you have an ArcSight or a Splunk, those are way better technologies than WEF, not going to kid about that, but you can kind of combine and build on that, because a lot of the places I visit, they may have spent that millions of dollars on something like centralized logging, but they're missing the events from the workstations. And the workstations, you know that slide where we have the bad guy come in, he puts the malware on the workstation, goes laterally throughout the environment? If you're not getting the events from that workstation, you're not going to have any of the insight into there. And many times it's cost prohibitive to get your workstations into your centralized logging solution, because you've got to buy an agent, you've got to pay by data, that sort of thing. And what we can do with Windows Event Forwarding is we can augment the investments you've already made. So we can get that event from the workstation, bring it into your central pane of glass, and you've got that viewpoint. Because another thing is, many people when they're logging, when they're doing their logging strategies, they're doing it from a security engineer standpoint. And that's great, because when I come up and you've got 4 terabytes of data and I want you to pull out 1 terabyte of data so I can do forensics for it that day, that's beautiful. But from a knowing what's abnormal in your network standpoint, that's really difficult to dig through, because you've got so much and you have no idea what's happening. If right. your Active Directory administrators are getting paged at 3 a.m. for account lockouts, you're probably monitoring too much. So we really want to take the Windows Event Forwarding and target it to absolutely known bad things. And that's something that we have that's free, we have guidance for, and a lot of people can put that into their environment today and be prepared a lot earlier and have a lot more data should they get that call from a government agency.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, because I just got done today with an engagement where, you know, I'm a TAM, but I still go out and do a lot of networking related engagements. And
you're the ultimate guy at that, really. Yeah. I've heard legends of you, Lex.
I am Mr. Network. So I get there, and you're going to cringe. You're going to cringe. You might as well get ready to cringe now, because you're going to cringe, right? customers running XP, cringe number one. Customers running Office 2007. Customer doesn't understand why their accounts keep getting locked out. And customers complaining about the amount of bandwidth that is that they're seeing across their WAN. Now,
so I found
that they're really bandwidth constricted, right? They have, I think I ran speed test, and I think we got like 3.8 megabits a second from the desktop up and like 1.2 megabytes per second down. And so just as an example, I fired up my AT&T MiFi, connected to that, and got like 15 up and 8 down on a, you know, cellular network. So they're real bandwidth constrictive, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was some malware involved in there just because of the account lockouts and the fact that, you know, they're running an operating system that's how many years old now? 20?
Yeah, the thing about XP is I've got some, I've actually was at a customer that was a university and a guy was doing his PhD on how easy it is to hack XP. Because the thing about XP is you are known vulnerable right now. There are things that's not being patched. You are 100% vulnerable all the time. It's just like when we talked about browsing the internet with out-of-date Java. You are always going to get owned. There's no mitigating control that I can say 100% it's okay to have XP. So it really is, you know, get current, stay current is very, very important because you are carrying around a lot of baggage from there.
Yeah.
But we do dwell in the land of reality, right? So a lot of times when we talk about the monitoring, the detection, and the protection strategies, you have to be on a supported OS because we don't support you if you're on an old OS. But we can do really awesome stuff on 2008 R2 still. For instance, we have this KB article called 287.1997, because I memorize these things, where we actually backported some of the features from 2012 R2 and 8.1 to 2008 R2. And one of them is a principle called local account. It's a new well-known SID. And that's twofold awesome, because now, even though you've got older operating systems in your environment, you can, one, create a protective control. You can build a group policy that says all local accounts are denied access to systems over the network, RDP, batch service, and all of that, stopping a really known bad guy behavior, stopping the use of local administrator accounts by bad guys. But the other thing is you can actually use that SID. And another thing that a lot of people don't know that we have this new thing called special logon, and it's actually a registry key that you can define who you care about is a special logon. And what you do is you create a registry key, put it on your systems, and it's going to create an event log that says someone in this group logged onto this system. So
wow.
If you haven't made it, yeah, I know. Like, we don't talk about this enough, because if you haven't made it all the way to something like securing lateral account movement and you're not able to keep domain admins from logging into workstations, you have no idea what's happening in your environment, because that's where so many customers are. They have no idea what account X is doing. You can create this GPO, you can link it, and now anytime somebody in any of these defined groups logs into a system, you have an event ID, something you can alert on with Windows Event Forwarding. And you could even create a special group. Just call it stuff that should not log on to workstations. Put your service accounts in there, your domain admins, enterprise admins, the CEO, I don't know. And then boom, customize logging of bad behavior on your network. Free, built in, something you have today.
So my question is, why does nobody know about that?
You know, it's really a little bit unfortunate, because honestly, I don't think we've done a good job of explaining it even inside of Microsoft, some of these capabilities. So I do a lot of talks internally. I do a lot of internal training on these sort of things. And a lot of our engineers, you know, are learning this right now along with the customers. And that's not throwing anyone under the bus, because security, the release cycle in security is hourly, right? So there's always going to be something there. But we've done a lot of really good work recently where we've been moving towards talking about what's already there, implementing it, not so much go buy something. And I think one of the most amazing signs of that is earlier this week when Satya did the briefing and he announced the Enterprise Cybersecurity Group, that's the new team that I am on. So we have a dedicated team to be thought leaders, industry leaders, getting this information out. We're going to be reaching out directly to security leaders. We're going to be doing a lot more insights like this, and we're going to be talking about how to use the stuff you already have in incredible technical detail. We're going to be evangelizing to the customers, to the TAMs. We're going to be talking to other technology space leaders. There's some of the media here that I'm talking to. So that is going to change, Lex. We're going to make sure that you know about all these capabilities that you already own.
Yeah, that's cool, because I guarantee you a lot of people here don't know that. And if we don't know it, you know, there's no doubt our customers don't know it.
So I've only been at Microsoft for a year. There was a year in September. And one of the things when I came in, I've got a longstanding background of building what I call identity-based firewall rules. There's a principle inside of the Windows firewall where using the IPsec filter driver, you can build a firewall rule that says that unless you're Bob from Bob's computer, you can't talk to this port on this machine. And I came in and I said, guys, this is great. Let's talk about this. And people looked at me and they'd never heard of it before. So I think a big part of it is we need to think outside the box. And this is where I want customers, Microsoft people, and everyone to help out. Because your insight, security is everyone's job now. The fact that I learned how to do identity-based firewall rules wasn't because I was a security person. It's because I had an out-of-date healthcare application at the company that I was working at, right? I want more people to understand that they have a say, they have some skin in the game, and we want to hear from them. Teach me the tricks of the trade of what's going on in SQL. Right now, there's a way that you can launch SQL, compromise an entire domain by launching Mimikatz out of SQL. A SQL guy taught me that, right? So wow. Let's start the conversation. Let's dig deeper into what we do. And let's not just wait for a product to solve the security problem for us. And that's my kind of, you know, sales pitchy type of thing, is so that we all understand that there's a security piece for us all to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that part of the issue is that everybody, you know, learns their piece and knows their piece in depth, right? And if it's not their piece, then they don't really get a chance to go out and learn those things. And that's sad. But you're right. Security is everybody's business at this point, and it's certainly something that's critical for us as a company. I don't know, you know, you weren't at Microsoft 5 years ago because you've only been here a year. But, you know, there was a period of time where you'd walk into an Apple store and you'd hear people say, oh, well, I want a Mac because, you know, Windows has viruses and gets hacked all the time. And, you know, now it's essentially just the opposite. You know, they're not that Apples get hacked all the time.
Every platform can get hacked.
Exactly correct. Every platform's getting hacked, and we're actually doing a great job with updates and making things more secure. And now we have, you know, you and the entire team behind you to help our customers, you know, resolve and prevent these types of issues.
Yeah, and you touched on something which is so true, is you touched on a little bit about silos in IT. And that's not just a problem our customers have, is because you have to choose at some point in time between depth or breadth or lack of social life. I chose lack of social life, so that's why I can do a little bit of everything. But I mean, it is really, it's not that people don't care. It's not that people aren't smart. It's that you're a really, really good Exchange guy. You probably don't know about that attribute in Active Directory for file permissions in SMB3. You know, so it's really, we need to become a lot better at sharing and collaborating. And security traditionally hasn't done that. It's been very, very territorial. So that's really where I want more people to come out and they want to showcase what they're doing. The piece of malware that I use in my demos and I'm doing at Ignite Australia is actually written by an Exchange PFE. So, you know, giving people the ability to shine, understanding what they're doing. Chris Schrimdischer is an Exchange guy. He does Office 365 all day long. We visited his, and we talked a little bit about SLAM, and we talked about all the different security stuff, and he's like, I understand a really cool way I could take over a system. I'm like, bring it on, buddy. So he gives it to me, and I'm like, this is exactly what real bad guys are doing, right? So, you know, this is about, you know, giving everybody their little bit of platform. You know, there's a ton of people that I work with, you know, that I've talked to that have a little bit of knowledge about one thing or another, and I like to bring them together because then they share and they collaborate. And we need to do that more, and that's not something we do very well in IT or security in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's really, you know, that's the direction we're going. I mean, that's what Satya talked about, is it's about collaboration, it's about innovation. So that's the ask for the customers and everything. But my promise is that we will be providing more of what we did talk about today to get you ready for an incident response. So we've got the links that are going to be down below, a little bit of the stuff that we talked about. We've got the sessions that I did here to get you ready with that logging and getting you ready to do what you need to do, making sure that you're able to detect the changes and everything we've been talking about in all the other sessions, building the correct protective controls so you have the right detective controls. Focus on the stuff that's really, really, I hate to use the phrase low-hanging fruit, but you know, you don't necessarily need to worry about the shiny attack of the week, somebody plugging in a USB drive or hacking your Audi if you've got domain admins logging into your workstations right now. So we're going to help you prioritize a lot more. We're going to have got a lot of blogs where we talk about, you know, what to focus on first, and we're going to help you kind of do that signal to noise separation so that when you do get that really, really bad call, it's not going to be you fighting off the ambulance chasers. It's going to be you knowing exactly what you're talking about, being ready to have that conversation and surviving that incident that happened to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, that's what it's all about. So I don't know what your time looks like, but I know that we've been at this for about an hour. So I'm assuming that you're probably just about done, or just about
ready to go.
Yeah, unfortunately,
I have to go hack myself so that I can present that and do my last session here. So to be continued.
Yeah, absolutely. But listen, thanks again. You know, your episodes are always awesome, and you know, we certainly love having you as a guest. And I've got some ideas for some other stuff that we can do that I'll talk to you offline about. But thanks again, and have fun in Australia.
Yeah, and thanks to anybody who watched this. We're going to make sure that you have some links down below to do the things we talked about with special logon and that logging so that you can start to be awesome.
Yep. Hey, let me ask you a question. Do you still see cockatoos in the street?
I don't know what they are, but they're these strange white dinosaur-looking birds.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And then... So I did actually hug a koala. Maybe we'll share that picture. I don't know. So I hugged a koala while I was here, but at the wildlife park, they have no squirrels in Australia. It is the strangest thing to me. There are no squirrels here. So replacing the squirrels at begging at picnic tables are these adorable little lizards. Really, really interesting if you're an American.
What about kangaroos?
I petted a kangaroo. I fed a kangaroo. And most importantly, I took a selfie with an emu.
Yeah. So I went to Sydney. Are you in Sydney?
I'm in Gold Coast. Yeah.
Oh, Gold Coast. Okay. Yeah. So I went to Sydney to train, you know, the Microsoft support staff on Windows 95 a while back.
Just a little bit ago.
And saw all the same stuff. It's really cool. What a beautiful area.
It's wonderful. Yeah, so very exciting to be here. Very exciting to get the Australian public involved with us.
All right. Well, again, like to thank Jessica. And without further ado, I guess that's your Taste of Premiere.